It is time to bring in none other than Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
You go to my head and you linger like a haunting refrain.
I don't know. We should sing. You
go well, to... the next line is about champagne. That's the rhyme. Refrain, champagne, there's the food and wine connection, and here I am.
And there you are.
And we are so happy.
You go to my stomach.
Well, that's not bad. You have a nice voice, Marshall.
It's terrible. I am tone deaf.
No. But that doesn't prevent him.
You're too modest.
He likes to be on stage is the really more important thing.
Is it like my four-year-old niece? My nephew doesn't. She loves to perform, but as he said, I don't know what to do with a girl who can't sing, can't dance, but loves to perform.
But you hit it right on the head. I am like your four-year-old niece in lots of ways.
So the subject of the week is the sensational lemon cake. Let me start by saying, introducing myself, I'm Arthur Schwartz, and for most of my life, I was an editor. And people don't even know what an editor does. Editors do many, many things, but they usually, in the coarsest term, save the ass of the writer. In other words, we're somebody who reads the story and says, well, this is all well and good, but... In this case, there was a story that ran in the New York Times, which seems not to have editors anymore.
Well, they got rid of them all.
It seems so. Or they bought them out, at least. I know a few of them that took buyouts. They have no editors anymore. So there was a story with a recipe several weeks ago, and I started to read the story, and I said, oh, you know, I might want to make this cake. And it was talking about Craig Claiborne, discovering this cake, blah-bitty, blah-blah-blah. You didn't know until at least a third, if not halfway through the story, that Maida Heater, the creator of this recipe, is and the goddess of baking to most Americans of my generation and a couple after, is still alive in Miami at 101 with an assistant. She's compiling a book of her most popular recipes, of which this is not only one of them, but maybe the oldest
one. It's in the top
five. The one that started her career as a baking writer. She baked... by the way, Maida Heater is the daughter of Gabriel Heater. And who remembers Gabriel Heater? Raise your hand. That means you're old. Gabriel Heater was a... newsman and broadcaster for, I don't know, 50 years probably. He was one of the many really like Walter Cronkite type voices of honesty and authenticity in America. His daughter, now 101, is living, as she has for many, many, many years, most of her life, in Miami. Anyway, so the dessert is called the East 62nd Street Lemon Cake, and it's a Craig... It is now on the New York Times cooking site, as written by Craig in the 1970. Her first book was published, I don't know when, but after that, and I have to say that a lot of her recipes are now standard, you know, made by bakeries, made by cafes, made by people. My sister's famous brownies are actually Maida Heater's, one of her many, I'm sure, brownie recipes. And this cake apparently is so pied. It was my radar had not picked up on this because I never liked to bake until fairly recently. And by the way, you can read this poorly edited story. I don't want to say it was badly written. It was written by a woman named Margot Lasky. It ran March 30th, so it was only not even 3 weeks ago. Any editor would have said, you buried the lead, Margot. That's a journalist's term, meaning the lead isn't where it should be, which is at the beginning of the story. She buried it somewhere in the middle. Because the main story to me is Maida Heater is alive and well and baking still in Miami at 101. So this cake, I decided I'm making this cake. I don't like to bake lately because I shouldn't be eating this stuff, but we had several people stopping by for coffee or tea or cake over the weekend, so I thought, okay, I can do this. Plus, I sent home my housekeeper. I sent her home with about a quarter of the cake for her little kids. Well, they're not so little anymore. Anyway, the cake is sensational. It is a lemon pound cake. The lemon flavoring in the cake itself is just lemon zest. And then you make a syrup with the lemon juice from those lemons, meaning just lemon juice and sugar. The recipe actually says you should heat the lemon juice to dissolve the sugar. But if you use instant dissolving sugar, you don't need to do that. I happen to want to finish off a little. You know, they charge you a fortune for instant dissolving as opposed to plain old granulated
What's
sugar.
What's in it? Just briefly, what makes
it? No, it's finer granules. Oh,
that's
finer
all.
Granules.
Okay.
Yeah, and it, so years ago, I learned from my friend Carol Walter, baking teacher and writer. She also, her book's legendary as well as Made a Heater. But I learned from Carol that when you get the sugar home, put it through the food processor, let it whirl around a bit, and you'll get a finer granulation, and you won't have to spend double or triple or whatever they're charging nowadays for instant dissolving. You know, you used to be able to buy instant dissolving in a 2-pound box. Now they only sell it, at least Domino only sells it in these peculiarly shaped, like, cruet things that I don't even think they hold a pound. It's probably like 12 ounces. We were talking about this the other day. So many things that used to be by the pound are now 12 ounces. Go to the supermarket. Don't get me a pound of coffee. Get me a 12-ounce coffee.
No, but I started noticing this just by heft. That's where it first dawned on me. I was holding it, and I was going, this doesn't feel like a pound.
Yeah, it's not. Right. So, in fact, in the days when I was buying my coffee at Fairway, because of it's very good coffee, also because of the price, and I would say, well, I was paying $9-$10 a pound, whatever the grind was at the time, to a friend. They said, well, that's not so cheap. I said, but it's a pound. It's a full pound, not 12, 13 ounces, whatever. Anyway, so back to this cake. I went to the supermarket to buy lemons, and lo and behold, something I had been looking for years, unwaxed lemons, were in my supermarket. And there was even one bag labeled Italian Sorrento lemons. These are the lemons, obviously grown in and around Sorrento, but all around the peninsula, the Amalfi Coast, Salerno. In the apartment I stay in Salerno, we have a lemon tree right out by the driveway. In fact, the lemons can fall on your car if you park it underneath the tree. And Sorrento lemons are special in several ways. First, flavor-wise, they're intense and sweet compared to our normal lemons. And they are unwaxed, as I said, which is a great thing to do for making limoncello, because you only use the outermost part of the outermost part of the peel, I guess you'd say, leaving the pith behind. And because they're not waxed, they can get little black dots on them, which is a kind of fungus. Now, it doesn't affect the juice at all. And in fact, you could make limoncello with those as well. But I didn't want little black dots in my very white, you know, pale yellow cake. So
right.
I eschewed that one. But there were four lemons in the bag. It was $3.99. Yes, it's $1 a lemon is a lot. But lemons, even California lemons, costing could be 80 cents each, I saw the other day, for a similarly sized lemon. Now, these are not those gigantic ones you see if you've ever been to the Capri or the Amalfi Coast or Sorrento. These are smaller. But you know what? The tree in the yard where my friend Sylvia, whose house this is, she lives in a citrus grove. We have every citrus you can think of except limes. And I'm still trying to find out why Italians don't grow more limes, but they don't. But these lemons were, I thought, you know, really particularly fragrant. Two tablespoons of the zest, which I did on a microplane, really made the cake taste lemony, besides the glaze, the lemon syrupy glaze that you put on at the end. And they are sweeter. I did have a slice just the way it is. And you can eat these lemons, peel and all, if you like a little bitter. They're way less bitter than our lemons. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to find these again. It's a company called Bella Vita Mediterranean Taste. And if you do a search on Italian Sorrento lemons, what you're going to get is their website. There's not too much on. I was surprised. There was not too much about Sorrento lemons. I'll tell you what I know. The reason that they're so prolific is that the trees bloom and bear fruit all year. It's not just a season. I mean, really, it's almost any time you go to the Amalfi Coast, you're going to see lemons on the lemon trees. And what's interesting is you hardly ever see the blossoms. It's not like they bloom all at the same time and then get lemons all at the same time. So the blooms are less conspicuous than they are on other kinds of lemon trees because they're interspersed with what is much more attractive, the lemons themselves. So the other thing about Sorrento lemons is that they were at one point so prolific. I'm talking about after World War II. I'm thinking in the 50s. I have to look at my notes about this. But sometime after the war, there were so many lemons that the price for lemons was so low that it became not financially viable to grow lemons. They just let them fall off the trees and rot. There's a family, however, on the Amalfi Coast named Massa, M-A-S-S-A, and they make wonderful limoncello. They had all these lemons, and they said, well, what are we going to do? You know, like, this is terrible. The family property is worth nothing anymore. Until somebody said, well, you know what? Grandma always used to make limoncello, this liqueur. It's not, people think it's a digestive. It's not really digestive. You can, if you think so, maybe it is, but it's not like these herbal after-dinner liqueurs that Italians drink, Amati. It's more for its deliciousness. So they started making limoncello. Now it's a big operation, and they've done a lot of experimenting with hand-peeled lemons and machine-peeled lemons, and it's become a science to the Massa family, but they make a very fine product. You can buy, I saw it, you can buy it online, but it's carried in many, many stores, too. So if you're in a store and you see Massa, it's a good brand. Some of the brands are way too sweet. Personally, I only like undersweet limoncello, and I make it myself. And if you can get unwaxed lemons, it's the best. Now, I did, in the beginning, when I first started making limoncello, I had a friend in California send me lemons. And she was able to send me a mixed box of greenish ones and or mottled and yellow, and those are the best. But it's hard to find unwaxed lemons to do this with. And if you end up doing it with waxed lemons, wash them under hot water first. That'll take off some of the wax. And when you finish making your limoncello, you're going to have some gray stuff that floats to the top. I call it limoncello schmutz, using a Yiddish word. But what it is, I've learned, is that it's the horrible wax, and you can get rid of that by running the limoncello through a coffee filter. And I do know Italians, by the way, who do this. It's not necessary if you have unwaxed lemons, but if you do, it's a good little thing to do. So to make limoncello is easy. You just peel the lemons. If you happen to find these nice unwaxed lemons from Italy, you peel them with a vegetable peeler as thin as possible so you don't get much, if any, of the white. It's called the pith, P-I-T-H, and the outside is called the zest. And you put it in a jar, and cover it with, I use Everclear, the grain alcohol. People do it with vodka. If you can find 100-proof vodka, okay. I don't think it comes out as good with 80-proof vodka. I much prefer Everclear. And, you know, I think that's like 95% alcohol, which would be 190-proof. But you're going to dilute this. So you cover the peel with, let's say, a liter of Everclear, and you let it sit for at least 3 or 4 days. I like 4 days. Sometimes I even, depends, on I let it go a week. What you want to do is check the piece of peel, and if it snaps, if all the oils have been leached out by the alcohol, the peel will snap when you bend it. And then you've gotten everything out of it. There's no reason to leave that in there anymore. And by the way, the alcohol will, at this point, have turned yellow. To this, you add an equal portion of sugar syrup, and depending on how sweet you want it, is how much sugar you make. You know, you're going to need at least 3 cups of water and a cup of sugar, but you could have more sugar than that. And you bring that to a boil, mainly to dissolve the sugar. And, in fact, sometimes it dissolves even before you come to the boil. As long as it's clear, it's okay. And let that cool down, and you add that to your alcohol. You've strained out the peels, and that's it. There's limoncello. You can drink it right away. It's better after a few days, but many people put it in the freezer and let it and serve it icy cold. It won't freeze because it's alcohol. However, think back in the grandma and great grandma and great great grandma Moss's day, before World War II, before World War I, when they made limoncello, which by the way is this, a newish word. I read somewhere that it wasn't coined until maybe the 1920s or 30s, but in any case, this lemon liqueur is very old. They didn't have freezers to put. Even nowadays, Italians don't think of their freezer as a storage place. Not Italians I know, even the rich ones. They may have a freezer, but I don't know. They may put their limoncello in the freezer, but you look in the freezer, there's not much else in there. So that's limoncello. This lemon cake reminded me that there are bakeries in Amalfi and on the Amalfi coast, not just in the town of Amalfi, but I mean it's mostly in Amalfi, where they serve cakes like this, a lemon pound cake. And then when you order a slice, they bring over the bottle of limoncello and splash a little limoncello over the cake. But I don't think I need to give the recipe for this cake on the air, because anybody can go online and find the East 62nd Street lemon cake. What was interesting about this is this cake recipe has been around for so long that there are a lot of comments about it by people who've been baking it for many years. And one that I took heed to, well, there were several that I took heed of. One was the recipe, as written by Craig Claiborne, calls for 325-degree oven. In one of Maida Heater's cookbooks where this recipe appears, it's a 350-degree oven. I think that was some bad editor's change, suggesting that 300—I know these editors. They would say, 325 is not a typical temperature, so let's make it 350, and maybe we reduce the time by 5 minutes. Well, as somebody pointed out, 300 for a pound cake like this, which is dense and has a lot of butter, people are going to recognize this thought. A lot of pound cakes come out with unbaked centers or bottoms, and there are several reasons for that, but one of them is if you bake at a higher temperature, the outside is going to bake and brown much quicker than the inside. So a 325 for a little bit longer is a better temperature. So I heated that did 325 instead of 350. Another was, somebody said, I always cut this into very thin slices because I always think pound cake tastes better in thin slices. And you know, whoever that was, she was right. I've been serving it as three very, very thin slices on a plate, as opposed to one thickish slice on the plate. And I think it really does taste better in thin slices. It also takes longer to eat, which is a good thing. It's a very rich cake. Calls for a half a pound of butter. Speaking of the ingredients, just for the hell of it, I added up what it costs to make this cake, because I have a friend who's a baker on Staten Island, James Carozza. He has three different bakeries. One of them is called the Cake Chef. That's the oldest of the three. And he brought me a cake fairly recently, a pistachio buttercream layer cake. It was unbelievable. And he said, you believe I can only get $20 for this on Staten Island? I said, you're kidding me. Here in Brooklyn, it would cost at least $40, double. In Park Slope, you know. Well, actually, all of Brooklyn is pretty, you know, gentrified now. So, ends up, I say to a friend in Manhattan who was eating this cake, I said, she said, oh, you'd pay at least $50 for this cake in Manhattan. So, I just for the hell of it, I added up this lemon cake, which, by the way, is going a long, long way. I think it cost $7 to make this big 9-inch in a Kugelhoff pan. You can use just, actually made it here, just calls for a tube pan. I had one of those decorative Kugelhoff pans, which I'm always, you know, scared of because there are so many crevices in those, it's sometimes hard to get the cake out. But if you butter it well, if you want to bake in a Kugelhoff, here's a hint. You have to really butter it well with softened butter, not with melted butter. I've tried the melted butter, you know, brushing it on. It doesn't come out thick enough for most of these pans. And then, in this case, I used breadcrumbs to line the pan, as May the Heater suggests. One of the comments was that somebody uses finely chopped pecans, which I think would be great, actually, even walnuts. But truthfully, I like the crunch that the breadcrumbs give. And when you brush on the glaze at the end, those breadcrumbs really glisten. I like the whole look of the thing. It's a great cake. If you want to bake, it's East 62nd Street lemon cake. It's probably all over the internet by now, but the original Craig Claiborne recipe is on the New York Times cooking site.
Okay.
All right. So I now the question is, do I freeze the rest? I think I'm going to.
Yeah.
Because it's sitting on the counter, so tempting. It's, you know.
Yeah,
I'm going to freeze the rest.
Yeah.
I have about maybe a fifth of it left.
Okay. Oh, freezing!
Yeah. This is after we already ate too much of it.
Right.
Over three days.
That's why you freeze the rest.
Also, by the way, it's holding up beautifully. You know, 3 days out of the oven. In fact, I suggest that you make this the day before you want to serve it.
Okay. Does when you unfreeze it, when you defrost it,
yeah.
do you leave it out for what do you do? Just leave it out?
I just leave it out. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I would leave it out uncovered, because it probably is going to get some condensation, even wrapped very well in plastic, and foil, however I'm going to wrap it, but in plastic for sure. You want it to dry out. Actually, this cake is better exposed to air because it gets nice and crusty on the outside, but it's only the end slices that have to be protected. Sound good?
Yes, sounds delicious. These are things
all the more for me to go put it in the freezer before I eat another piece.
Exactly. And you'll feel virtuous, and then...
Well, I could. Or depends what else I'm going to eat today.
That's right.
That's right. Certainly. You can see.
Virtue can be short.
The day has only begun. Temptation awaits everywhere. Well, actually, not so much, because it's so horrible out. I'm not sure I will go out. And in the house, I only have some good food. Although, you know, I was thinking this morning, asparagus. I do have asparagus to cook today. That I might make. This is from my Jewish cookbook, because I have the matzah meal pancakes based on cottage cheese. I opened a container of cottage cheese last night, and when it's fresh, it's unbelievably good. So I might turn it into matzah meal pancakes and have that with asparagus.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it is good.
And healthy. And a little bit of lemon cake.
Well, yeah. Relatively. The latkes are fried. So, yeah, not the healthiest.
You got to have a little. It's got to taste good, for crying out loud.
Yeah, for crying out loud. All right. Well, have a merry, happy week. It's going to be spring again. Well, you know, everybody's complaining about the weather, but this is pretty typical April weather.
Quite right.
So it'll all be over soon enough, and May flowers.
Right. That too. Okay.
All right.
Love you, Bob.
Hang in there.
Yep.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven this morning here on The Breakfast Club on Robinhood Radio. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton, Flawless Catering and Event Planning, HathawayYoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, JARestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, Rubiner's.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.